The Next Big Thing, written by Anita Bruckner and read by Stephen Thorne.
Chapter 1. Hertz had a dream, which, when he awoke into a night that was still black, left him excited and impressed. He dreamed that he had received a call from his cousin, Fanny Bauer, the love of his life. He was to take her to the cinema, she ordained. Eager to conform to her wishes, as he always had been, he shrugged on his coat and within seconds was elsewhere, as was the norm in dreams of wish fulfillment. Although it was a weekday afternoon, the cinema was so crowded that they had to stand at the back of the auditorium. Fanny was as he had always known her and still remembered her, petulant, with the petulance of a spoilt, pretty woman, demanding and discontented. Shortly after the beginning of the film, she had clutched his arm and declared that she felt unwell. Again, without transition, they found themselves in the vast cafe that was part of the cinema complex. Fanny had recovered somewhat, but looked uncharacteristically dishevelled, with a large camel hair coat slung over her shoulders. He was conscious of retaining his eager smile, but felt discomfited. This feeling had something to do with the coat, which he recognised as his own, the coat he should have been wearing. He had no memory of having offered it to her. The coat, and Fanny's malaise, remained closely associated in his mind. It was only when he understood that it was he who had been taken ill that the dream attained its peak of significance. Ailing, smiling, he had offered her his remaining health and strength, and she, not in the least grateful, had carelessly dispossessed him, not noticing that she had done so. This was so akin to their real-life association that, if anything, his newly awakened self was conscious of its reality. Brought back to himself, he was aware of the smile, of complicity, of acquiescence, directed to the corners of the dark bedroom. Only the relentless ticking of his clock informed him that he had woken up, that this would soon be a new day, all too closely resembling the others, the normal days of his present existence, in which nothing happened nor could be expected to happen. He had not seen her for 30 years. In the dream, they were both young and she was still unmarried, before Neon, before Malario, before his own family had come to England. It was his longing that had made him feel close to her, since he thought about her so often and so much that there seemed to be no distance between them. This longing extended to her parents, whom he preferred to his own. He knew that his own parents were socially inferior, although he suspected that morally they had the upper hand. His mother had never forgiven her sister for marrying out, though by no means observant in her own right. His father, a modest man, deferred to his brother-in-law without ever feeling entirely comfortable in his presence. Yet it was this brother-in-law, Hubertus, who had guaranteed them safe passage out of Berlin. Their house, one of those chic villas that Hubertus was so good at constructing, had all the charm of a more carefree establishment, an hotel, for example, or some kind of resort. By the same token, his aunt, Anna, appeared always on the verge of giving a party. They played bridge, drank cocktails, yet even at his young age he could see that they were merely fashionable, slightly meretricious. He did not know, then, that they were worried about the fate of their ardent, dark-eyed daughter, whose looks were so suspect in the Germany of that time. His own parents were worried, morbidly worried, not about their own fate, but for that of their elder son, Freddy, their musical genius, rather than that of the eagerly smiling Julius. This had brought the two families momentarily closer. There were more telephone conversations than had previously been the case. Hubertus would stay behind. That was never in any doubt. But it would be prudent for his wife and daughter to move elsewhere, out of harm's way. Hertz's own father, an employee in a firm that made musical instruments, had every faith in his colleagues, in his director, to whom he had pledged his loyalty. How could such loyalty not be recognised, and, if necessary, protected? His mother, who was afraid of everything, dreamed of escape from the many difficulties with which life had presented her.